The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows. Only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. I have Rossi here with me. I have a great honor, a guest here with me. He's actually directed Chasing Amy. This is a documentary film based off Kevin Smith's film. I have Sav Rogers here, and I'm excited to have him here. So let's go on ahead. Let's welcome him to the show, and let's do this.
Wow, I love that intro. That was a great little graphic there.
Thank you. You should have seen the first one we had.
It was horrible.
Send it to me after the show. I love to see how things evolve.
Oh my gosh.
We don't always start we never generally start in the highest place that our art ever gets to become. Otherwise, it's like a fluke, right? You know?
Exactly. Send him that drawing, John.
Oh, yeah. I'll send you that great art piece that doesn't look anything like us.
Nothing like us. Nothing like us. Yeah.
I look like a Middle Eastern. Well,
yeah. Yeah.
That's who's, how.
Who's that?
You're right. Exactly.
Who was that?
It was bad. But I'll be glad to send that over to you.
I appreciate it.
But look, here's the thing. We really enjoyed your documentary. Thank you. Felt like it was inspiring. I felt like, you know, it made me realize, you know what? I want to get off my ass and start making something of my own. So I find it very inspiring. I've also felt like, you know, I loved how you went on the TikTok. And then it starts off with something small like a TikTok, and you didn't expect anything from it, probably. And then all of a sudden you get the idea for the documentary. And, you know, it's like one of those things of, you know, I want to do this, but how do I get here, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the TED Talk, for context, was huge for me, mm-hmm. you know? So there are, like, levels to TED. So there are, like, TEDx Talks, which are, like, independently organized TED events in, like, different communities. And what I had stumbled into by complete accident was an opportunity to give a TED Talk at TEDHQ, mentored by, you know, some of the best and brightest in, you know, the largest public speaking organization in the world. And so I was very honored to have the opportunity to do that and to tell my story, especially because, you know, when I was in the residency, which was like this 3-month idea incubator, I was there with like renowned world professionals in their field. And I was, you know, an early career filmmaker wanting to tell a personal story. And the great thing about that group of people, all of whom I love dearly, and I really cherish that time in my life where I got to learn from all of them and to be in that space and be creative every day, was the fact that they made me feel like I was supposed to be there. It was the first time in my life I had ever felt imposter syndrome, but they just made me feel so supported when we were there. You know, and the reason that I had gotten the opportunity to give the TED Talk was because I just had this idea for a Chasing Amy documentary in my back pocket. So when they asked me in my interview, they were like, "Hey, we really like you, but we haven't heard an idea for a TED Talk." And I was like, "You're so right, because I don't have one." They were like, "Well, if you had to give one tomorrow, what would it be about?" And I told them about my personal relationship with Chasing Amy and the life-saving impact of storytelling. And, you know, they took a beat after hearing that. And they were like, that was the most narrow, specific idea for a TED Talk we've ever heard. We'll let you know in 3 weeks. And then 3 days later, I found out that I got it and that I was going to get to move to New York and participate in this program. And it was the institutional credibility that I needed to be able to like properly launch the documentary, because I didn't know anybody involved in Chasing Amy at that time. I hardly had any industry connections outside of regional film festivals. And right. So TED gave me so much, but also I was the engine, because I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to figure it out. And that is what I've discovered is the thing that's gotten people to like say yes to me so much, is that they know that I'm going to finish and I'm going to follow through on something with or without their participation. Now that's a double-edged sword, because sometimes people can leave you hanging to like, you know, do all the work sometimes, depending on the budget level you have, you know, what you can logistically do on a production or anything like that. But for the most part, it's just attracted like the best people in the world that I get to work with at this level, you know? And so I am so grateful for my time at TED. And I'm also so grateful that, you know, for what this whole journey of making Chasing Amy has given me, which is really solidified my work ethic, but also, you know, has put me through my paces as a filmmaker, you know, posed really like deep existential questions of, you know, self, which is really helpful in being able to tell stories, because if you really know yourself, you can really identify what's special about your voice, what kinds of stories you want to tell, if you're right for a project or not right for a project. And it just really helped me learn to trust my instincts more through the process of doing this for 6.5 years at this point.
That's really amazing.
Thanks.
I have to say the whole TED Talks, when you were in the documentary, when you were telling a story about finding this movie, Chasing Amy, and you were talking about who you were as a young middle school student or whatnot, and then you found this film that just kind of opened up your world to find characters that were like you, and I think a lot of young people maybe go through that, where to discover someone that's like you. For me, I was really quiet, so I discovered this film a little bit older than you guys were, but still exploring these characters that lived free and that were happy, and it's like only on TV. But I loved, can you tell everyone about that, when you said, I found this film, and who you were at that time and what this film did for you?
Yeah. I mean, for anybody who has not heard, you know, the review that y'all have given for my movie or what it's about, you know, the inception of Chasing Amy and what the film is about, is that I saw Kevin Smith's film Chasing Amy, a cult classic from 1997, as a closeted queer trans kid living in Kansas. And I saw the film at 12, at a time in my life that was really difficult. I was getting, you know, you can call it bullying. I call it harassment at school for seeming queer. I didn't even know I was queer yet. I was very socially awkward. I was very isolated. I didn't have that many friends. And I certainly did not know what I was doing socially, like so many of us as children. And so yes. Children are not supposed to have all of the answers to anything, right? And so I see this movie at age 12, and it's the first time that it really clicks with me, you know, for a lot of things. One, that movies have to be made by somebody. It's the first time that my curiosity in a film has piqued so much that I like have to learn more. It was the first time that I had knowingly seen queer characters in a way that resonated with me. Specifically the character of Alyssa stood out to me in the way that she talked about her sexuality. I also identified with Holden being like a geeky, insecure, romantic kid. And so these were things that became a life raft for me. And Chasing Amy became my favorite movie. And I watched it obsessively over and over and over again over a period of years. And it kept me alive. Content warning, I suppose. When I was dealing with a lot of like suicidal ideation as a child. Now, these are the facts of my life, and Chasing Amy took up a whole lot of space at a time where I didn't feel like I had a lot of things like community or acceptance or, you know, the things that kind of, as an adult, you kind of come to, ideally, you come to have as like a toolkit. I didn't have that toolkit as a kid who was deeply alone and isolated. And so Chasing Amy became this life raft for me, and it just, I just became fixated on it, and it became my favorite movie. Mm-hmm. And I was having a really hard time in school. And when I tell this story, like, you know, I don't think there's anything necessarily special about my circumstances, because I think as kids, we're often prone to, you know, being teased or picked on, feeling depressed, feeling anxious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think we've all seen Inside Out at this point.
Yeah.
Right? these are very normal emotions. Normally, you just don't want to kill yourself. Or maybe you do. You know, I can't speak for everybody. So the thing that was remarkable about this, I think, was that, you know, through Chasing Amy, I found a vocation through fandom. I see this movie, and I see a possibility for my future where I otherwise do not see one. Now, this is a story that is as old as time, regardless of your background. You don't have to be queer. You don't have to
be
the amount of people who I met or who worked on Chasing Amy, who told me that they became filmmakers or they got interested in the business because they saw Clerks. This is the same thing applied, right?
Right.
Through a different lens. And so I think we all have this, and I think this is why Chasing Amy is a worthwhile watch for anybody, regardless of where you're coming from, is typically if we're obsessed with stories, there's like one that got us really hooked and excited. It gave us a sense of purpose or direction, or it helped us hold on a little longer, or it helped us get us through a hard time in our lives, or it helped us figure ourselves out.
Right.
This is... storytelling is an oral tradition as old as language exists. And cinema, as I believe Scorsese said, is like the ultimate vehicle for empathy because of its, you know, because of what it can make you feel. And so that's what Chasing Amy did for me. And so Chasing Amy explores my coming of age against the backdrop of Chasing Amy first when I'm 12. And again, when I am making a documentary about the legacy of this film among queer people, because not everybody felt so hunky-dory in the queer community as I did about Chasing Amy.
There was,
there was some controversy
yes.
Because of the relationship between Ben Affleck's character Holden and Joey Lauren Adams' character Alyssa. Joey Lauren Adams' character Alyssa is a self-identified lesbian at the beginning of the movie, and she enters this romantic relationship with the main character, Holden, who's a stand-in for Kevin Smith. And so what I found fascinating about Chasing Amy is that it's this like cultural Rorschach test. Like, no matter where you're coming from, you have this like really strong reaction to it. And so there was this interesting conflict of like, well, this is a movie that saved my life, and it is a movie that not all queer people feel so hunky-dory about. So where do we go from here? And so that's the jumping off for Chasing Amy. And then it becomes this like deeply personal story about me coming of age against the backdrop of it. And that's kind of where everything started, from me as a kid to where the story ends up.
And that's something that I really have to say, though, for me was like inspirational in a sense, because here's the thing, you're just like how your film was inspiration and stuff like that for other people. Clerks 3 was inspiration for me to start writing a short story because of the stuff that Kevin went through and things like that. But I also want to touch on this. Like, I like how you covered the positives and then you also covered the negatives as well. Because here's the thing. I actually watch a lot of documentaries where it's like, let's just be positive all the time. I'm like,
right.
You can be positive, but you also have to talk about the negatives too, because the negatives is also what helps you identify about who you are. And also makes you look in the mirror. It's like, look, I used to be this person, but I'm no longer think like that anymore.
Right.
And that, because of that experience, I'm now shifted into something different. And I think differently. And I think that's the important thing to have, is to talk about the positives, but also talk about the negatives. And I think you shifted that really well with it. And I like how Kevin also manages to be really vulnerable, though, too, just as your vulnerable as well with some of the stuff that you have to talk about and everything too, where you have that equality between the both of you, to where you guys can relate and be down to earth with each other. And that's something that I really liked about it, was the fact that you showed vulnerability between the both of y'all. You managed to cover the positives and also the negatives. And that's why there's such much of a reach for this documentary, that this is why I fell in love with it. This is why I liked it.
My thing about it was the fact of not knowing, you know, if not watching the documentary, not knowing that there was a backlash from, you know, the community, the gay community, the lesbian community, because they didn't like the fact that it was this straight male that's going to tell this story. And I didn't know that, because when I watched the film, I've seen it so many times. I just loved the film. I just loved the characters. I loved how different it was, but also, you know, the camaraderie between some of the friends in that film. You know, for me, it was like at the time, oh my gosh, I wish I had a group of friends like that. I wish, you know what I mean? You right. find something in the film, but knowing that it didn't go well for everyone and it didn't sit well with everyone, I was shocked by that, because I was like, what? Well, why not? I mean, you're telling a story that's different, you know, until you explained, and others in the film explain why that was a problem, mm-hmm. why they felt like that was a problem. I didn't know.
Well, thank you both so much for your, you know, very kind praise just now. And Rossi, you just said something that also made me remember a part of the story that, like, from when I was a kid, where it's like, yeah, I wanted a group of friends like that.
Yeah.
I wanted that camaraderie. You know, yeah. I'd watch Full House and be like, wow, yeah. I wish my family was like that, right? You know?
Still, yeah, it's so true.
it was aspirational, this, you know, this idea of having this, like, these, like, deep bonds with other people, which I'm thankful now to have in my life as an adult and through my, you know, work as a storyteller, but also through other things. You know, I've got like a D&D group that's going to start in January, you know, with some friends. You know, I'm very thankful to be rich with that community now, but you touching on that really illuminated that for me for the first time in years, thinking about like, yeah, no, I wished I had that friend group when I was a kid. You know, they seem so adult and interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what I saw, was that, yeah. Because like you said, you don't have to be queer to get that from the film. Everyone's going through something. Yeah. And me as a young person, you know, kind of a loner, mm-hmm. you know, watching that film, because I was a loner. So I watch movies all the time, and I would live through some of those movies. Like you said, there's some where you just like, oh dear to you. Well, when I discovered Chasing Amy, I loved her. I loved the characters. And I just, like you said, in this city. So I would fantasize about, when I get older, maybe I'll have a group of friends like that, and maybe we'll be tight like that. And it'll be, you know, so yeah. I got that from the film, and having you explain that. And even like you said, as a kid, being thrown names that you don't even know who you are at 12.
No.
What the, you know what I mean? You don't right. know who you are, and they're using words against you that you're like, I'm not even there yet. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
That was big for you to say that, because looking back, it's like, yeah, when we're that age, you pick out kids that are different because they look different. So you get those, you know, the D words or the, you know, the F words, you get that, but yeah. we're children. So I've felt for you with that, and going through harassment myself in school. Mm-hmm. I get that, because kids are cruel, but you don't even know who you are.
Yeah. And you know, there are studies that show that, you know, there are kids who have a sense of, you know, both their sexual orientation and also gender identity by the time they're four. But I wasn't thinking about that stuff, because right. I wasn't thinking about myself at that level. I was introspective, but I had other stuff going on that right. I wasn't thinking about that. That wasn't right. the biggest priority at that point. It would become a preoccupation for the next, you know, 15 years. But I wasn't thinking about that stuff deeply yet. But I want to go back to something that you said, John, where, you know, you said that you appreciated the fact that we bring up the negative viewpoints mm-hmm. on Chasing Amy. And, you know, conflict is at the center of all right. decent storytelling. Like, if there's no conflict, there's no story.
Right. There's no story building.
And so, you know, something that we really seek to do in the movie is to allow everybody to speak from their own perspective. Right. And so, you know, my perspective as a storyteller is I want to present all of the all of the arguments against Chasing Amy, because even though there are negative arguments against it, there are just as many positive arguments for it. And ultimately, cinema is a subjective experience. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if Chasing Amy is quote unquote problematic, which is an incredibly imprecise term. That could mean a whole range of things. The worst thing about a film isn't that it's problematic, right? The worst thing about a film is, can it put somebody in danger, right? Can it be perpetuating misinformation?
Right.
Which, you know, the critique of, you know, it's depicting a lesbian as being interested in a man. Like, I can understand the perspective that that is harmful misinformation about lesbians, that they can be turned. But the way Melissa describes her experience as she talks about her own sexuality is more akin to what we would call bisexuality or pansexuality for the most part, you know? And also, there's a fluidity of sexuality that people express today that was far less expressed in mainstream media in 1996 when this movie was filmed, in 1997 when this film came out. The month that Chasing Amy came out is the month that Ellen DeGeneres came out as a lesbian on her sitcom. And we all know what happened there, where he was fired, kicked out.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Out of showbiz for a bit. And the name Ellen went from being a very popular girl name to having a very downhill spike in popularity. You know, there was a lot of people could not process, you know, that lesbians existed, let alone that they should be accepted in mainstream society. That's not to say that there weren't great queer films being made at the time. Go Fish, which is a movie that we cover a lot in Chasing Amy, came out 3 years before. It premiered at the 1994 Sundance Film Festival with Clerks, you know, and is part of this like class of like independent film darlings that, you know, made a real impact on culture as part of the new queer cinema movement. And that didn't always reach mainstream audiences, you know, in the suburbs, so to speak. You know, you had to be interested in that kind of stuff to find it. We didn't have the internet as readily available. It was harder to find things that depicted an experience that you could share. And so, you know, all of that to say, like, you know, you have to depict the negatives in about Chasing Amy for it to be like a real authentic story, because audiences are smart, and the audiences that show up to see this movie are extremely smart. So we wanted to make sure that this was going to be as real of a conversation as possible, or else why do it? And so I knew going into the movie that I would never be objective about Chasing Amy from the perspective of my 12-year-old self. However, that doesn't mean that I can't acknowledge that there are truths that exist for other people, even if they are not my personal opinion. My personal opinion is not the end all be all of culture, and certainly not about how people feel about cinema or any one given movie, especially not one as complex as Chasing Amy.
Right. And there's something that I wanted to talk to you about too, like the fact that, you know, Rossi brought up the fact that, you know, these characters are relatable and stuff like that, and wanting to have a group of friends. I was like that too towards Chasing Amy as well, and other movies that I've watched. And I like the dialogue within itself because it felt so real, and it felt like I can connect with these people as well. And I wanted to hang out with them. And I was a comic book nerd, and I'm still am. But I also played Magic the Gathering, D&D, and all that other stuff. But here's the thing, though. I was always getting picked on for being me and who I am, to the point where I wanted to actually kill myself. If it wasn't for my friend Nathan going over to the social worker over at the school or anything, he's like, the counselor said, "Hey, look, we need to talk." I said, "What do you want to talk to me for?" I said, "I'm good." He goes, "You're not good." I'm like, "Okay." So next thing I know, she had a pet talk with me. And after that, I was like, you know what? Life is worth living. I'm not going to kill myself over something that's probably not going to matter later on in life.
Right.
But I'd rather be here now talking to you than to be 6 feet under and being friends with Rossi and making the connections that I'm making and being friends with people. Right. And that's one of the beautiful things about cinemas and movies. It can save someone's life. It can actually show the power of it. And yes, film is subjective because you can't quantum physically measure something. That's what film is. And it's also the one place that brings people together at unity. It doesn't matter about religion. It doesn't matter about politics. You're there to experience one thing and one thing only.
I found the movie. I remember it was a few years after Chasing Amy. It was called Kissing Jessica Stein. I don't know if you guys seen it. That movie was honestly one of my all-time favorite movies. I've seen it so many times, but that's another movie where at the time I'm just watching a movie. This is just a great movie, but it was something huge at the time. And the characters was great. And you had some great, great actors in it. But it's just movies. You know, when we look at movies, it's just movies and it touches you in whichever way it touches you. It's not for just that person or whatnot, you know? So I think, John, that's how you and I connect. It was just on movies. Just if it's a good movie, let me tell you, I'm there for it. Absolutely.
Right. I can text her and be like, hey, look, want to review this? Well, let me take a look at it. And I'm like, I'm telling you, it's good. I think that we should do it. And so she'll go in and look. And she goes, yeah, you're absolutely right. We'll do it.
Let me ask you this, though. Yeah, sorry, John. Okay, so in the film, you have all those iconic places. How was it for you? And it was cool watching you go to the comic book store, go to the record store. How was that walking those steps of where the movie was filmed? Because I thought that was cool that some of the places were still there in the record store and you talking to the guy. How was that?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because I had built this experience up in my head like I was going to my version of Mecca, right?
Okay.
And when I went there, I was like, oh, these are just places. They exist irrespective of whether or not Chasing Amy was filmed there, whether or not Kevin Smith ever decided to make a movie that utilized these locations. And so it was then that it, you know, really solidified for me that places and movies, they only have as much meaning as we ascribe to it as an audience. And so when I was there the first time, you know, I was a little starry eyed and excited, but you also see me in the Quick Stop where I'm like, all right, let's get out of here.
Right. It's like, because, I'm doing that. Right.
Because it's a gas. It's, you know, it's a little convenience store. It's, if there was gas pumps, it'd be the equivalent of a gas station. I'm grateful that that place exists, but it's also not, that place has meaning because people identify with Kevin's work.
Yes.
And it only has as much meaning as you give it. And so it wasn't a transformative emotional experience. And so it was going there that, you know, I think my relationship with Chasing Amy had really started to change, you know, where it went from this thing that held up so much space in my life to where I could start to let it go and allow the things that were naturally taking up more space in my life, like my relationship with Riley or my community, the fact that I was making my own movies now. You know, I could let go of that a little bit and it was okay. You know, it was one of the first steps of like letting me know, like, it's okay to let go a little bit. It's actually normal to let go. We don't want to be caught in the state of emotional arrested development forever.
Right.
My favorite thing that you did up inside the comic book store was like this. You got to see the Chasing Amy hat that Kevin wore. And you're like, and I like how Riley said, do you want him to get it for you? And you're like, no, if I'm going to get it, I want to at least get one from Kevin. So that way this one can be placed here because that's the one he wore. But if he wants to, I like that respect that you have for him like that.
Yeah.
I really felt that respect for you. And my other favorite line that you said in the documentary, when you're sitting in the cafe area, it's like, I can't believe my ass is sitting in the same spot that Ben Affleck's ass is sitting here. That made me bust out laughing because I'm a huge Affleck fan too. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, it's these things only have as much meaning as we ascribe to.
Right.
You know, I probably stood in 100 places in LA that Ben Affleck also stood. Right. You know what I mean? It's
right.
But it, you know, it was cool to be in that diner. You know, they had changed the name and they had changed some of the seating and stuff like that. But you know, it was great to be able to experience that and kind of, you know, discern for myself, like how much meaning it would continue to have in my life. And it's the food's good there. The food's good there. God, let me tell you, that is not a moment I thought would be in the trailer, let alone that something that people would come up and quote to me. I was deliriously sick that day, where, you know, a lot of people think when they're watching the movie, there are a couple of scenes where like my voice cracks and they think that's from second puberty, which is a thing when you go through puberty a second time. But really it was because my voice was so hoarse from being so sick in the middle of shooting. This was before COVID hit, by the way.
Wow.
It was not COVID. I had basically given myself, long story short, I had gotten the Sundance flu in January. We had shot those in February of 2020. And I had given myself basically an overdose of Emergen-C, which is like, So our producer, Carrie Radigan, was like, hey, you should take this. And I just kept taking it, hoping that it would help my immune system. I don't know if you know this, and I didn't. It's 1,000 times worth your daily dose of vitamin C. And so I arrived in New York. I went to like a meetup with friends, and I immediately had to leave because I was like, I'm puking in the bathroom here. My voice was just raw from that. So unfortunately, not second puberty, but rather just being sick. So when I'm like sitting there, and both times I went to New Jersey for this, I was deliriously sick. You probably see a little bit of cold medicine salve in those scenes. But had I known that it would end up in the trailer, maybe I would have been a little more buttoned up. But you know what? It's fine. We make movies, and you see me through a lot of different periods.
I thought
of
it
life.
Was an emotional thing for you. I'm like, oh, okay, this is emotional or whatever. So
No.
So I'm like, okay, I guess
it's me.
It's moving.
It's really me. I'm interested that you interpreted it that way, but it's really me just making peace with the fact that, again, these places only have as much meaning as we give them. And I'm also so sick.
Right.
But meeting Kevin Smith, though, how was it? Like, that's the first time you ever met him?
Yes.
Okay.
We had spoken on the phone that you kind of see for a second, mm-hmm. In the documentary. And then, you know, we had texted here and there, because, you know, trying to figure out when we would get to meet in person. And Kevin was game for all of it. So he asked, like, do you want me to answer the door? Do you want to find me in the house? And I was like, oh, I'd love to find you in the house. And so we get to walk up the stairs and go up to his office. And everything you see in the movie with Kevin is 100% legitimate, 100% how I felt. Where I was so elated that it was all coming together and that he wanted to talk to me and participate in this documentary, because, you know, it takes a lot of guts to participate in a documentary that's going to critique you a bit. I don't know a lot of filmmakers that would participate in a documentary that's like, hey, you know, your work is considered problematic by some. Do you want to talk about it? And most of them would be like, fuck no, I don't want to do that. And Kevin was game for all of it, which I have endless respect for him for, because that's a hard conversation. I didn't throw him softball questions. You know, I asked very pointed questions about, you know, allegations of homophobia. You know, I asked him about Harvey Weinstein, and he answers all of them. I would say pretty gracefully.
Right. He does. I have to say that, like, the questions that you ask him, and even whenever you have, you know, Joey Lauren, you know what I'm talking about. Even when you have her on and everything too, as well. You know, that both people and everything too, just talking and just pouring their guts out and giving you the trust and the understanding that you're here to make a documentary, and they're putting their life in your hands and know that they have full faith in you. That's awesome. That's really great to have something like that.
Thank you. I was just going to say it was an honor that they trusted me with their truths, because that is the hardest part of documentary filmmaking, is when somebody trusts you with their truth, what do you do with them? What do you do with that? And we did everything that we could to honor the perspectives of everybody who participated in this movie, whether they talked to us for 30 minutes or, you know, as long as, you know, up to 15 hours, I think is what Kevin ultimately ended up giving us over the course of
three interviews.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you did a great job. I'm happy. It was nice that you did a documentary about Chase and Amy, because you brought it back into the forefront of a conversation. And for people who didn't get to watch the movie, you know, you can go back and check out this awesome movie called Chase and Amy, and then, you know, and then know more about it with Chase and Amy documentary, because it is a cult classic. You know, a majority of Kevin's films are cult classics, but this one was just really good. And I'm so happy that you brought it back up, because I was telling John, oh, I've seen that movie. I remember that movie. I love that movie. There's a documentary about it. Yeah. And then it makes sense, because it's like, it was just what it did for me. And if it did that for me and it did that for you, Sav, I mean, who else did it touch, you know, at the time that needed that? Yeah. Because there wasn't a lot of movies like that back then. So to have that was just great. And it was just an all around good movie. And even the I forget his name, the guy that was the asshole in the movie that Kevin put in there, because there is a guy like that that's going to change the gay woman and turn her straight. You meet those guys a lot, you know, give me a minute with you, give me a moment with you. And I'm happy that he put that guy in there, because it was everyone's point of view. And that's exactly how it was. You meet those guys, you meet people like that. So it was just a good movie. It was worth the documentary. Let's put it like that.
I'm glad
it's definitely worth it.
And just one more thing to add, though, before we close out, is this. My brother is gay. And so for Kevin to say that he made this for his brother. Right. And here's the thing. I didn't think about it until Kevin said this. He goes, I made this for you, man. He goes, because it has to be horrifying not to have anything for you to self-identify with. So I thought that was really clever of self-identification and looking out for his brother. Try and find something. It's like going to Blockbuster. And it's like, there's nothing here. Let me make something for you instead of me find something for you. Right. And he made this. I thought it was really great. Chasing Amy is hands down one of my favorite movies. It's part of pop culture. You brought it out in the forefront, like Rossi said. This is going to be part of everyday conversation. I promise you that people are going to find this documentary and they're going to find something to geek out about and talk about.
I have friends at work that are already watching it, that's watching the documentary. When I told them about the interview, and I was like, have you seen Chase and Amy, Kim? I was like, oh my gosh, I love that film. I'm like, yeah, there's a documentary. She's like, I got to see it. I'm like, you can watch it. It's streaming. Go check it out. But yeah, so when I bring it up to people to get their point of view, you know, at work, what did you think about the movie? Majority of the people's like, oh my gosh, I remember that movie. That was a really good movie. So now you know there's a documentary about it. So yes.
Well, I appreciate
folks at work. You're welcome.
I appreciate both of you spreading the word, you know, every bit helps, you know. I've been floored by the impact that this doc has already had on people. You know, I wake up, you know, most days where somebody has sent me a kind message about the movie. This morning, you know, somebody sent me this long email through my website, you know, just, you know, kind of coming out to me. You know, and I've received a lot of emails like that. I've had a lot of conversations like that after screenings where, you know, this movie makes people feel more comfortable with themselves, or, you know, they understand a family member a little better. Their parents have trans kids, they're queer themselves, and Chasing Amy did something for them. Or they share no life experience with me other than the fact that they like Kevin Smith movies, and it makes them more empathetic. I read this Letterboxd review that was like, yeah, I was on the verge of being a transphobe and I watched this movie. And that's everything. You know, you can't make movies expecting a certain outcome or results, because that's unattainable. You'll never be happy if you're just like chasing awards or acclaim or whatever, but you have to make art that feels really authentic to you. But I won't lie to you. Like, this is a part that makes me feel really good, is that, you know, I put myself out there, you know, both as a director and a part documentary participant. And so many people have responded kindly. And it's had the effect on them that Chasing Amy had for me in some ways, maybe not as drastically as, you know, not wanting to kill themselves anymore. But geez, I mean, it feels good to know that people feel like they can be themselves more as a result of this existing. And that I'll take that to the bank every day.
Absolutely. What do you have going on now? Like what are we going to get next from you?
Ooh, what are you going to get next? There's a lot in the works right now. I just, I have a film that I'm working on next called Pancake Skank, and it is not a documentary.
not a documentary.
It is a fucksticks friendship comedy set in a world of always nighttime through a sci-fi fantasy surrealist lens.
Oh.
I've got a short that we're about to make. We've got some very cool people who are going to star in it. We just got one of my dream executive producers to sign on to it. And so when I can talk more about it, I will. Nothing's real until there's money in the bank account. And so we're still in the fundraising stage right now. But this is a film that I wrote back in 2018 about wanting to be known by another person. And I think it's heartfelt and funny. And I think people are really going to like it. If you're a genre fan, if you like comedy, if you like sincerity, I think this is a film for you. So I hope you give it a chance and watch it the way that people have been given Chasing Amy a chance and watching it.
Absolutely. We will review that when it comes out. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Because we love reviewing short films as well. So that's another thing.
Hell yeah.
So yeah.
But there's more in the works. There are more documentaries. There's more everything, but just nothing I can talk about publicly except for that one right now. So whatever's next, I hope y'all are watching, and I hope you similarly dig the next ones. I try to make films with sincerity, which I think people are genuinely allergic to nowadays. But if you can let yourself feel some genuine emotion for 90 minutes, I hope that my films will resonate with y'all the way that it's resonated with both you, Rossi, and you, John. I appreciate you having me on your show today.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you and your publicist for sending this out to us. We wish you nothing but the biggest success with this documentary. It already has legs. It's already doing what it needs to be doing. You're getting emails left and right. So I mean this from the bottom of my heart. I hope that this thing is successful and it keeps on going for you.
Absolutely. Get well, Rally. Get well.
Get well. Get well.
I will pass on the kind words to her. And thank you both. I appreciate you so much. And
thank you.
Thanks for having me on your program. And again, great opening graphic. Look at you two.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And we'll catch you guys on the next one. Bye.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at tanger.com.